Thomas Jefferson University neuroscientist Tim Mosca this week reached out to fellow researchers displaced by Tropical Storm Harvey and encouraged other labs to do the same. He joins me now to update how that effort is going. Dr. Mosca, thanks for joining us on NewsWorks tonight.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate the opportunity.
So it's Thursday. Back on Monday is when you made this effort.
Right. Absolutely.
What was the intent?
There was a discussion on Twitter amongst a number of scientists across the country about watching the devastation of Harvey. What can we do to help our colleagues? We had a lot of memories of how labs and scientists were affected from Superstorm Sandy a few years ago, from the hurricanes in the past, specifically Katrina, and how New Orleans institutions specifically were also affected. So we wondered, what are the things that we could be contributing to this?
And we've certainly heard about how, to varying degrees, hospitals and the academic institutions, University of Houston, Rice, Baylor, have been affected.
Precisely. And we knew that there are mechanisms within the National Institute of Health for supplements, for grants that exist to help people who have been affected, labs that have been distressed by natural disasters. But we also knew that those mechanisms take time. So we wanted to set up something, even if it was small and somewhat grassroots, that would be a little bit more immediate for these labs so that they would know that they would have support from the rest of their colleagues throughout the country.
And those grassroots efforts have apparently paid off in the context of March for Science Houston.
Absolutely. I had sent out a message to my followers on Twitter just to pledge your lab's support, be that taking on students or be that taking care of research materials or anything in between. And we had gotten a number of replies, but then late Monday night, March for Science Houston picked it up, and they have a wonderfully large reach on Twitter. So they were able to send this out to so many more people and get that many more labs volunteering their services, volunteering their support to all of the labs in Texas that are affected.
And as of now, to what extent have those offers been taken up?
So we have 200 labs across the country and even across the world. We have a few in Canada, France, England, and Germany as well that have volunteered any kind of support, from taking care of samples, replenishing lost samples, as well as taking care of students. And though it's still early times, we've heard four or five instances of people saying, I have lost a particular supply. Can you replenish it for us or help us with this? I have a student who needs to finish some critical experiments. Can we send them to your laboratory somewhere else in the country? So we know that there are discussions being had between individual labs affected in Texas and some of the labs that have so wonderfully volunteered their support.
Well, quite frankly, to the extent that the infrastructure has been so devastated in parts of Texas, how can you get those samples from A to B or researchers?
Right. So that's going to be, you know, a difficulty. And that's why, you know, our intent was not to set something up that people could do just right now, immediately. Right now, their focus, and absolutely so, is making sure that they're safe, that their trainees are safe. Our goal is that in the coming weeks, when these people are able to get back into their labs and assess what has happened to the infrastructure, that they realize, oh, I have, say, a freezer full of critical DNA samples, and that freezer's no longer working. Now, hopefully, there is enough infrastructure to say, can I just send that out to someone who will take care of it while I repair everything that's going on in my lab in Texas, and then be able to get it back from that lab once everything is back up and running? So a safekeeping function.
Do most labs and scientific research centers have backup generators in place to ensure that when the power goes out, whatever samples they need to preserve stay so?
Absolutely. Most institutions have both backup generators as well as emergency power, that these can ensure that should there be something so simple as a power outage or something more drastic like a natural disaster, that a lot of these things are protected for a certain amount of time. But with some of the devastation that we're seeing there, even the best backup generators can't survive if they're 6 feet underwater. So this is a case where, you know, that might be, you can, you know, much like if your freezer at home dies during a power outage. If you keep it closed for a certain amount of time, the meat that's frozen in there, the supplies that are in there are going to be fine. And that's the same with biological freezers as well. We just hope that these people are able to get to samples in time so that they're not completely lost and then they can send them somewhere else while they're repairing their infrastructure.
What are the range of scientific endeavors you're contemplating reaching out to?
So we have had the majority of our support from a vast array of biological laboratories, ranging from neurobiology to cancer biology, cell biology, across the board. But we've also had a lot of support from earth science labs, people willing to take on soil samples for storage. We've had a number of astronomy labs, a number of computer science labs that have volunteered space and cluster power for example, for resources that might have been at Texas that are not available presently.
That you thought to do this, and there has been this energy around it, was it that this kind of avail and infrastructure was not previously in place during previous storms, be it Superstorm Sandy or, say, Katrina?
I think some of the mechanisms were in place previously, but what we saw from previous storms was that they were either quickly overwhelmed or people just didn't expect the kind of level of need that would be had by some of these labs. So with this kind of fresh in our mind, as we were having this discussion on Monday, came the ideas to say, well, what if we get something going immediately so that once people have settled and made sure that they are safe and they start thinking about professionally, thinking about their labs, thinking about the progress of their research, that there's already some sort of a database that they can go to and identify people that could help them right out of the gate, as opposed to figuring that all out once you realize what the problems are and what has been affected in your own lab. So we just wanted to set up a framework so that people had that opportunity right away.
Dr. Moskow, let's focus next on your own lab. You work with fruit flies.
Yes.
What were to happen if your laboratory was in harm's way in terms of a storm? What avail would you have liked to have had for you?
So certainly, the fruit flies are one of the most important elements of our lab. So making sure that we had proper incubator space as well and institutions that were qualified and prepared to make, for example, fruit fly food that we can transfer our animals to, that they can care for within the proper temperature and the proper conditions, that would be the most important thing. We also do a lot of work with genetic samples, so making sure that things that are in freezers can stay frozen, can stay preserved, so that we can use them as part of our research. So those kind of temperature-controlled elements of science are the first things that, heaven forbid, our lab should be in harm's way. That would be what we would want to avail ourselves of.
And so, worst case scenario, if a fruit fly lab in harm's way was devastated because of a storm, what effect might that have? Worst case scenario, what would that do?
In a worst case scenario, if, for example, a lab's collection of fruit flies were lost, that would immediately pause their ability to do any experiments. And what we would have to do in that case, flies that were unique to that lab would probably have to be restarted, the production of those and making genetic mutations or particular tools that would be used to assess whatever question this lab was working on. But importantly, the field is large enough and generous enough that this could start a situation where you would start reaching out to other fly labs and say, I've lost all of these lines. What do you have? Can you send them to me? And that's also a resource that this database is going to provide. If that happens to folks that they've lost these lines, they can, for example, identify the fruit fly labs on that list and say, reach out to all of those and say, I've lost all of these lines. Can any of you help me by sending me a version of your copy? And so that we can get those reagents and those materials back in the hands of researchers so that they can restart their work.
I guess that's a relatively good situation for fruit fly researchers because
Precisely.
They do breed so rapidly. But I'm thinking higher up in the animal order, it would be a much more arduous task.
Exactly. Mouse labs as well as primate labs can have a lot more difficulty in that respect. There are a vast amount of generous researchers, and there is a lot of control for making sure that different mouse lines, for example, different cell lines, different forms of primate neurobiology, for example, are spread out, so that most people have the same mouse in a lot of different places, and then that can go through and people can request that line, for example, if something should happen to their local version of it, and that can be sent out. There's a lot more that has to go in terms of import and, you know, university machinations with bringing in animals as opposed to, say, a fruit fly or a simple, you know, tube of DNA. But all of those are firmly in place at universities throughout, so there is a framework for that to work normally.
Again, so early in the storm, most of the efforts are still ensuring that humans are found and safe. And
of
you're
course.
Saying a lot of this will take more time. How will you, weeks or months out, have a sense of how well this endeavor went?
We're already hearing a lot of indication that it's starting. So I imagine that the communication between individual labs as well as members that are on the database will keep getting back to people and saying, oh, this is wonderful. I was able to find help through this person, this particular institution or this particular laboratory. As well, you know, the community on Science Twitter, for example, is very active in making sure that our colleagues know where they can find support, know what the current status of that support is. So the social media aspects of this actually keep the science community very well updated. So I expect to be able to assess how our database is working and how this is moving forward through those kinds of channels in the coming weeks and months.
I assume your esteem in the scientific community, already established by the nature of your work, is now enhanced as a catalyst for this wonderful effort.
If that's happening, I'm certainly pleased and honored, but really all I care about is making sure that our colleagues know that they have the support of the nation behind them, that they have the support of everyone working on science, and that if there's any way that we can help them, we are more than happy to do so. It's the very least we can do.
And we are in turn pleased and honored to have you take time out to join us on NewsWorks tonight.
Well, thank you so much for the opportunity, and thank you for helping us spread the word about the database. We really appreciate it.